Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody. It's December 12th. We appreciate you being with us again this week, and many of you are faithful listeners each and every week. We even have companies putting their our broadcast up in their conference room and making it a part of their Monday morning meetings. We're honored to be a part of your day, whether you're downloading and listening live or whether you are downloading it and listening to it after the fact while driving in the car. We appreciate you taking time out of your day to be a part of this. This, again, is a first-of-its-kind radio program that's created by mortgage bankers for mortgage bankers, and we're thrilled to have you be a part of the program. A special thank you goes out to our sponsors, all of which you can go to our website, www.lickinonlending.com. L-Y-K-K-E-N, onlending.com, and you will see that see a list of our sponsors. A special shout-out goes to our new latest sponsor, New Penn Financial. We'll be talking a little bit about some of their new innovative products and programs that they've launched. Very exciting to see someone new out there with some new products. We'll be talking a little bit about that later in the program. Again, you're going to want to stay tuned to all of this for the whole program all the way through, because we've got Jerry Ault, president of Logs. This individual is someone who has achieved some phenomenal results and best practices in taking on some pretty daunting tasks. And I thought, I met him recently at the Five Star Conference. I talked to him again at the Mirror Catalyst. Very articulate and just a really delightful guy to get to know, and someone who has some great ideas about how to conquer some of the obstacles in our industry. And Lord knows we got a few obstacles. So I wanted him to come on and talk about some of the things that he's done, his can-do attitude. Stay tuned. We'll be going all the way through the rest of the segments, and then we get to Jerry in the Hot Topic segment. But without further ado, let's find out what's going on in interest rates. Joe Farr, good to have you on the program, as you are each and every week, giving us an update. What's happening today?
Hey, Dave. Yeah, MBS prices are up today, up about 6/32nds, and as are treasuries and stock prices are down. So what's that tell you? Things are disappointing in Europe.
Yep, I was going to say, so, focus back on Europe.
Yeah, a little flight to safety going on here. Yeah, it's a turnaround from Friday, too. You know, they had their summit, and they announced the framework of a plan, but nothing got done beyond that. And I think investors are a little disappointed that what they have gotten so far is just that, a framework and no real well-defined or enforceable plan of action. So, you know, it's up and down as we see things going on in Europe.
Well, clearly Europe continues to be a part of all that's going on. What did you say, treasuries? What was that you said about treasuries?
But treasuries are up, as you would expect. You know, we made a note, and I'll talk about it a little later on. A couple of weeks ago, MBS prices and treasuries were a little disconnected, but today we're seeing MBS prices and treasuries up, and stock, the Dow's down 225 points.
All right, let's talk about last week. There was a nice reduction in mortgage rates. I mean, that was encouraging to see, again, driven by Europe, I'm sure.
Right, as things were developing in Europe and the concerns leading up to the European Union summit and ECB bank meeting on Thursday, we saw a nice improvement in prices. Rates fell a little bit, and nice also to see that as rates were falling last week, the stocks weren't getting hit like they are today. So, so everyone was focused on Europe last week. There was very little economic activity going on or announcements going on here in the U.S. last week. So, you know, early last week there was concern, obviously, as the debt issues were growing, and then Friday when the summit was in the process of putting forth their plans, some optimism grew, and we saw a little reversal of it. But net on the week, MBS prices improved, and you know, stocks weren't hit too hard.
Yeah, consumer sentiment came in a little bit better, so.
Surprisingly, wasn't it? I guess that's what a run up in the stock market can do for everyone.
Yeah, I think anytime you see that, you see a run up in equities, you're going to see a run up in consumer sentiment. They seem to be very
that's
much
right.
tied. Let's talk about
that's
this.
Right.
Let's talk about this week, Joe, and some of the things. Again, Europe. So,
well, it's
going
to be there's no real scheduled items to point to regarding Europe this week, but there are a ton of things coming out in the U.S. that we need to pay attention to. You know, starting tomorrow. Well, right now, I don't know how the three-year auction is going. I'll let you know as soon as I hear what those results are. Tomorrow, though, we have retail sales, which is always a big item coming out early in the morning. Then the 10-year auction results will be announced at 1. But you know, the Fed meeting is tomorrow. This is one of those meetings, though, where there's not a whole lot expected from it. But you never know. People will pay attention.
Low expectations, huh?
Well, it's the last meeting of the year. Recent economic announcements in the U.S. have been, slow but growing economic activity. So most people are expecting they'll sit somewhat on the sidelines. But, everyone's kind of hoping for or thinking that there might be a QE3 coming around. And so investors will be looking for anything that might indicate that that's going to happen. I mentioned earlier that there was a disconnect between MBS and Treasury a couple weeks ago, and we talked about that. We talked about that the cause of that might be that investors are beginning to build in to an expectation for MBS purchases in a QE3 or in a quantitative easing.
Mm.
We'll see what happens. Interesting to note also that this is the last meeting for the current makeup, the current voting members on the Fed, and there'll be a new voting group of voting members at the next meeting. And the current group of voting members is considered a little more hawkish, and the upcoming group of voting members is considered a little more dovish. So the chances for QE3, I think, grows with that next round of or the next makeup of the Fed meeting.
What do we see as far as this on the calendar? Yeah, this week.
Yeah, the rest of the week, Tuesday, tomorrow's big day. Wednesday's 30-year bond auction. Thursday's big day. The PPI, New York Empire State Index, jobless claims, industrial production, Philly Fed, and then Friday CPI. So lots of those are very significant events, and we need to pay attention as they're being announced.
We will be paying attention, and we'll be looking over there at the what you have to offer on MBS Quote Line. Normally we play an ad, but I want to forego the ad today. I want to just talk about MBS Quote Line, Joe. I want to talk about the value of it. Here's what I'm hearing. What's really interesting is some of the leading people, I'd like to name names, but I won't, some of the top people in the industry are using MBS Quote Line because it's the simplicity and the looking at the system. Tell me a little bit about what some of the feedback you're getting from your customers, Joe, about MBS Quote Line and the value that it brings.
You know, Dave, it's really pretty simple. MBS prices are what investor or what price sheets are predicated on. They're the base element, and then you start adding margins and risk base and all this stuff on top of that. So knowing what MBS prices are doing, are they increasing, decreasing, on a minute-by-minute basis is extremely important to a lot of people.
And
to the extent that you're an originator, it's important to be able to explain to your customer that MBS prices are moving, and hopefully we'll let you know why, as well as be prepared to react to movement when it dictates it. So, it's very portable, it's very focused, it's very easy to see the path of prices throughout the day. Dave, I'd be the first to admit that we do not try to tell people what's going to happen in the future. I don't think we'd be very good at that, as I don't think anyone is very good at predicting the movement. But it is so easy to see what is going on with mortgage-backed security prices and to use that information accordingly.
Yeah, I think it's there's such a value. And again, if you're you look at who is using it within the industry, people that leaders, I mean, some of the top people in the industry are subscribed to your system, are using it to monitor what's going on because of the simplicity. And it's really, and I think you're well positioned to not try to be a prognosticator of what rates are doing. I think that's an entrapment. So I think you're smart. Report the facts, report them regularly, and bring it up. That's excellent. Appreciate that, Joe. Sometimes
well, thanks,
I love
Dave.
Your ad. I think it plays well, and I think it's just really valuable for us to approach it this way. So thank you for taking a few moments. Let's. I want to hear your feedback, audience, from for those of you that are using MBS QuoteLine. Call me, email me, shoot me some testimony. Love to hear about it. Love to get that. Each and every week, we cover a rundown on legislation. Oh, I tell you, Alice Alvey, I don't know if she has to get just her glasses and see the optometrist regularly, more regularly since she started doing this broadcast, but we really appreciate her and her staff's effort there at Mortgage U on bringing us updates on what's happening. Alice, good to have you with us. How's the weather up there in Detroit?
Hey, we have a sunny day today, so we're happy about that, even though it's only 29 degrees.
Well, sunny and 29 is better than 29 and something else. So
yeah, it's
anyways,
supposed
good
to get
to
warm this week. It's going to be a whole 40 degrees this week.
Ooh, wow. Well, give us an update. There's some things you want to talk. I know CFPB is one of the big issues, and if Cordray is going to get confirmed.
Well, yeah, no, I think, you know, this week, you know, we certainly see that there's a stop in being able to, in the Democrats' ability to be able to get Richard Cordray confirmed with the CFPB. And, you know, really, I don't want to dwell on it too much other than, obviously, as long as we don't have a formal head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, there are certain things that just can't get done. It's going to be very difficult to finalize QM and QRM without a firm head of that area. So we are just waiting to see. It could backfire on the Republicans, you know, with the fact that they're trying to stop this from moving forward. It's a tough consumer issue, right? Consumers obviously see the advantage for them for a bureau that's designed to look out for them. So we're just going to watch that. Obviously, everyone has different opinions. There have been bills out there to say, should it be a panel of five people and not just one individual? There have been arguments that that doesn't really matter anyway, you know, with the controls over
right.
the agency. So I think a lot of us just want something to get done so that we can move forward and we know what we have to deal with in our loan files. So we are just still watching that. One thing, Dave, I didn't put in my write-up ahead of time that I wanted to just call people's attention to is that, you know, November 3rd, the House of Representatives put out a concurrent resolution. So essentially, House Concurrent Resolution 85 has a lot of one-liner bullet points in it that state the House's opinion. And they are concerned, as you read through this this comment, that they are resolved to influence that the Department of Justice should consider aggressively going after the servicers for the problems that there have been out there, in particular with the robo-signing. And they're seeing signs of potential negotiations going on that the way that this ends, it's just a short document. It's interesting how it's a quick read of several areas. I can start with, for example, it's a bunch of whereas, and it starts out, whereas the United States has experienced a mortgage crisis since 2004, whereas since 2006, more than 3 million houses in the United States have been recaptured through foreclosure, whereas approximately 2.9 million home mortgages in the United States are in foreclosure as of 2010. So it lists all these, you know, facts, right, about what's going wrong in the industry. And at the end it says that the Department of Justice should be consistent with the following goals. The mortgage servicers who engaged in fraudulent behavior should not be granted criminal or civil immunity for potential wrongdoing related to illegal mortgage and foreclosure practices. And then a couple more points that they really should proceed, that federal government and state attorney general should proceed with full investigations. Kind of a little bit of a hint of, you know, not getting into too much negotiation to soften the blow, I guess, on the consequences the big lenders should pay. So I thought folks should at least be aware that concurrent resolution is out there.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's always good to know. And there are about 48 sponsors to that, so you should go take a look and see if you agree or disagree if your congressperson should be sponsoring that. Then take a look at the HUD Fair Lending Proposed Rule. Just an FYI that this is still, comments are still open through December. Comment period is open until January 17th related to the Fair Lending Proposed Rule. This rule is designed to clarify the process by which a lender would have to defend itself in the event of fair lending action. So I talked about it on last week's program in detail. Go back, listen to that show for some more detail. Also read it yourself and take a look at where your bank or company might sit in terms of defending, and if you agree with this three-step burden-shifting approach, and if that makes sense for you. And then also the Volcker Rule comment period is open until January 12th, so take a look at that as well. Those are my two comment periods that we're discussing. No movement on anything else in the market over the last week, and hopefully for the holidays they leave us alone.
Leave us alone. Imagine that, leaving us alone, Alex. I think that's interesting. What about House? And it's House Resolution 85. The probability of them leaving alone. It's like the regulations. The Grinch is trying to steal the Christmas to a certain degree, in a certain perspective. I understand why, but the House Resolution 85, the whereas part. That sounds like a pretty negative scenario overall on what we're on the industry. Is that any indication you feel for what we can anticipate, more regulation coming as a result of the, whereas the mortgage industry has basically screwed up the whole economy? Because, I mean, that's the thing,
yeah,
what I'm hearing.
You start to get that. Well, you know, there seems to be some concern in Congress about Bank of America reaching an agreement to pay $8.5 billion to settlement claims over the purchase of mortgages and some of the other settlements that are being tossed around. Maybe Jerry can speak a little bit to that later in the program as well, from the legal side. I'm not sure if that's his side of the business or not. But in any case, it's really, I think Congress is always going to try, and that's why we just keep watching them.
Well, we're an easy target right now because we certainly have an issue with the quality of what has happened and in the last cycle. So we do definitely have some issues. We do have, again, for you listeners, we do have Jerry Ault, the president of LOGS, going to be on the program here in just a short amount of time talking to us about, you know, some of the issues he sees. He's got a unique perspective as an industry leader and as an attorney working a lot in the area of foreclosure. Alice, thank you so much for bringing us an update. Greet all everyone there. And again, Merry Christmas to you and your whole group there at Mortgage U. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. It's good to have you be here with us. Again, we've got a little bit later after this next segment. We're going to be talking to Jerry Ault.
Stay tuned. You're going to enjoy that conversation. Great attitude, a can-do attitude.
But talk about a can-do. We've got out with us today. Last week he was gone. Andy Schell, the profit doctor, was out training CPAs on our business, and it's really an important service that he's providing to the CPAs, providing continuing education. So not only does Andy know this stuff, but he's the guy that teaches the CPAs that are oftentimes in your shops auditing you at year end. So it's a real honor. But Allison, Joe, I was at the mall the other day, and I suspect Andy Schell might have been one of the guys in the Santa suit in the mall making some extra Christmas money, because I heard him go, CFO, ho, 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 ho. So, all right. So that's my bad, bad Christmas joke on Andy Schell. Andy, good to have you back with us.
CFO, ho, ho, ho. Very good.
CFO, ho, ho, ho. So
the real question is, how much padding do I need to fill out the suit? That's what I want to know.
Yeah, you've lost so much weight here. You've done so well on this. It's just you would need a lot of padding. Good to have you on the program. Give us an update. What you got for us, CPAs and auditors? What do you bring back from that?
Well, one of the points we're going to talk about today is regulatory success. And why do we care?
Regulatory success, that's an oxymoron.
Well, you know, in a mortgage banking environment, you often would say that it is an oxymoron to say regulatory success, but I can tell you, in a depository environment, there very much is a focus on regulatory success because you've got address this clearly. And what happened to mortgage banking now that the CFPB is controlling everything, the OCC, the OTF, on and on and on, and alphabet soup? Since the CFPB is controlling everything, including mortgage banking, guess what's going to happen from a regulatory perspective? It's going to come fast, it's going to come quick, and we're going to get landed on with more regulation, more reporting, more requirements, more controls, more technology requirements. It's just going to happen, and it's coming quickly, and we need to be ready for it because it's going to land like an avalanche from those mountains you used to ski in Aspen, Dave.
That's true. It's coming without question. So, I get it. I get the success part. We got to be successful about it or you're going to be out of business. Good point.
Well, like you mentioned last week, I missed the show. Sorry I had to miss it, but Teresa, the CIO from our firm, and I taught a group of about 100 CPAs, all who audit mortgage companies. And so in talking to these guys, these guys are trained in auditing HUD lenders. That's what they do. They go into mortgage companies, and they audit the books of mortgage companies, and they want to learn more about mortgage banking and what's happening and the changes that are happening. And so when we started our presentation, we intended to speak for an hour and a half. We ended up speaking for 3.5 hours. They kept extending and extending and asking more questions and back to talk about that again. So, and we only covered 5 main points, and I'm going to give you the highlights of those 5 main points here during the Profit Doctor segment. But let me start by saying one of the things that we've observed in mortgage banking, and we believe this more fervently than ever before, is that we believe now is a great time to be in mortgage banking. It's probably even one of the better times ever.
Best times.
I know, Dave, you're working with a lot of investors to come into the business, people investing in mortgage companies. But one of the things we've got to do, and here's the 2 things we've got to do to bolster the industry as a whole. We've got to enhance financial management. We've got to increase the experience depth of our accounting team. Instead of having bookkeepers and payable clerks, every mortgage bank is going to need access to a CPA CFO. And this is not the CPA auditor. Generally speaking, financial management and mortgage banking has got to step it up 5 or 8 steps. And we also have to enhance our technology infrastructure because you have to do that to accommodate the increased regulatory expectations. And we also then also don't underestimate the complexity that all these changes are having on our technology. So there's just lots of pieces to deal with. So let me jump through the 5 areas that we talked about real quickly just to give people an overview of kind of what's on the mind of the CPAs when they come in to audit you. The first thing they're going to want to talk about is they're going to talk about LO compensation. And they're going to start by talking about the FRB ruling, and then they're also going to look at the Department of Labor requirements. You know, Dave, we've talked about this many, many times, but there's a minimum wage requirement for loan originators unless they can prove they qualify for the outside sales exemption by logging their time, being out of the office, and they have to be out of the office more than they're in their office, and being in a home office is considered being in the office, so that doesn't count. So it's really tough to get that out-of-office exemption as possible.
Exemption,
but you got to track the time. And so mortgage bankers are still not getting this. You have to pay minimum wage and overtime to originators. You have to. That's not even the FRB ruling. That was a Department of Labor position paper that came out in the past. On the LO comp rules, you know, I'm not going to go into all the pieces to it. The thing that is probably one of the biggest issues is, and we touched on the requirements that a producing branch manager cannot get paid the profit from the branch. They can only get paid a fixed override on the volume or other allowable basis, just like an LO. But now here's the cool part, is that there are some very effective methods to comply with the rule and still distribute substantially all of the profits to the branch manager and do it the right way. But there's some tricky things you got to go through to get there. We also talked about one
sounds
of the
like a hot topic segment. Just that one is a hot topic segment we should have coming up here in the new year.
Yeah, if I go through my list here, you may have a couple of more, too, that we want to talk about.
We may have a whole bunch of programs. We're never hurting for content. All right, sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
You know, the great way to get people to fall asleep during a radio show is to talk about accounting. So you want to be really careful about that.
We want them to come back. Yes.
So the other thing about it, we talked to the auditors about, okay, when you go into a mortgage company, what are you going to do? What are you going to look at? What are you going to test? And there's 2 things here. One is that we're going to watch for retroactive payments. you know, because you can't change the comp plan and make it be paid
right.
back for loans that have already closed. It has to be prospective is a CPA word. It means in the future, looking forward. It has to be from a certain date forward. And also they're going to be watching for dual payments, you know, for the customer and the lender as well. And now, one interesting thing about this FRB rule is that, and Teresa was doing a lot of research and talking to a bunch of attorneys and found this guide, there's a multi-state mortgage committee guideline for state non-depository examiners. So basically mortgage companies, non-depository examinations of the LO comp rules. And there's this publication out there that all the states are going to rely upon. It's called the Multi-State Committee Guidelines for Non-Depository Examinations. And in this book, they say what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. They talk about what they're going to, the questions they're going to ask. They recap the rule. It's the examiner's guideline for what they're going to do when they come to a mortgage company. It's an open book, too, Dave.
It's an open book. Yep.
Every mortgage company.
Good. That's a lot to encouraging, you would think.
Yeah, every mortgage company needs to right now go out and get a copy of that examination guide. And if they have a hard time finding it, then you know, give us a call. But you've got to have that. You've got to be able to know the answers when the examiners come in and start asking questions. Now, we also talked about, and I just looked at the time. I've got to speed up here. Next couple topics we talked about was the NMLS call report. We've talked about this many, many, many times.
Yeah, many times we have, yes.
The financial condition report or the standard report will be due coming up at the end of the year, and you've got to use accurate information. You can't guess. You can't use averages for the calculations based on assumed activity. You can't make estimates based on what you thought it will be. You've got to use loan-level details, data out of each closing in order to prepare that report. You can't just guess, can't just make it up. Filing a report that's incomplete is considered not filing at all. You can lose your state licenses if you don't take this stuff seriously. We also talked about the mark-to-market accounting and how it can be very distortive to financial statements. We presented to the CPAs how we, as a firm, propose to fix that for our clients to basically not realize the unrealized gain in the pipeline directly into the earnings, but only through the capital accounts. It gets complicated, but if you're interested in learning about how to fix that issue, if your financial statements come out from accounting with mark-to-market information and your profit is going up and down and up and down and up and down, doesn't make any sense, this can fix it. Now, we can help you do that. We also drove into loan-level accounting because you got to have that. You can't do the NMLS report without loan-level accounting.
Yep.
You won't know your profit per loan, profit per LO, profit per branch without it, and you can't do your KPIs without it. So you got to do it. And then lastly, we talked about technology, and Teresa covered a number of key topics, including the importance of change management, having a change management plan to make sure all systems work as intended and that all interfaces are moving data across platforms accurately. And it's got to be tested. It's a huge issue. It's underestimated almost always. So that was the main points we talked to the CPAs about, LO comp, NMLS, hedging activities, mark-to-market reporting, loan-level accounting, the essential role that plays, and having a very solid technology infrastructure that's tested. People just walk in the room, turn on the light, expect technology to work just like the phone, and it does as long as you test it, make sure it's working right. So that's the profit doctor for today. Dave, always
that is questions. So good. Did any of them fall asleep during that? No, do accountants fall asleep when accountants are talking?
No, they're very attentive. They are very
they're
well.
Very
plus, Teresa
you
told
were,
a bunch of jokes.
You were asked.
And you know, it went really well.
Yeah, you were given an hour and a half, and they had you back for another hour and a half, almost two more hours. I would call it success. Andy, thank you so much. Good to have you back on the program. Folks,
thanks,
we'll
Dave.
Be right back after this brief break.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan, if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact our Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900.
Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
It helps if I turn on my mic when I start talking after a break. Sorry about that little pause there. Hello, welcome back to Lick It On Lending. We are so grateful to all of our regulars, Joe, Alice, and Andy, for bringing us great content each and every week. And a special thank you goes out to our producer, Andy Alvey, who is out there making sure the ads run and everything works according to what he has got to follow me, and it's a tough act sometimes when I'm moving around as fast as I do. But we're really fortunate. As a result of this program, I get invited to attend conferences, speak at conferences, and partly as a result of the program, partly because of, you know, just we do that a lot in the industry, and I get to go with Alice, follow Alice around, carry her luggage, and speak at conferences with her. It's really fun. But one of the things we have as a result that you get to meet, Alice, as you know this, we get to meet some really amazing individuals. And on one of the conferences I was at, which is a five-star conference in Dallas, I was encouraged. They say, we've got to have you meet and have on the radio program Jerry Ault. He's president of the Logs Network, and you will just find him just really articulate on a lot of the issues. And so for those of you who are regular listeners, you've heard Jerry. I think this was back in September. We had him on the program for a very short topic, short shot. And then we wanted to bring him back because of some conversations I've had since then. And I got to tell you, this is an individual who has a can-do attitude. When thrown some really challenging tasks, it's amazing what he's been able to accomplish. Jerry is the president of Logs, which is L-O-G-S, is the name of Logs Network. He's been that since 1988. He grew up in your neck of the woods, Alice. He's up there from the Detroit, and he has a graduate degree with Bachelor of Science from Oakland University and a law degree from Wayne State Law School. Not only did he become an attorney, but he married an attorney. Jerry's wife is one of the key people at Fannie Mae, and is Jerry speaks at conferences across the country. He has got an extraordinary success and track record of doing things that, quite frankly, many have said could not get done, specifically in the area of loan modifications. Without further ado, I want to bring Jerry Ault to the radio. Thank you so much for being willing to join us from Chicago, Jerry. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Dave, and thank you for being so kind with the introduction.
Well, it's a real honor, and I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversations, and I think you to be one of the critical thinkers of our industry, and we like to get many critical thinkers on this program as much as possible. Jerry, let's start by talking a little bit about Logs. A lot of people, I was not familiar with your company. I've been in the industry 37 years. I had not heard about it. Tell us a little bit about your company, where it started, where it began, and a little bit insights into your business.
Well, it's a long story. It's not that interesting, but I'll do it fast for you.
Make it interesting, though.
In 1971, our two founders, Jerry Shapiro and Dave Kreisman, were attorneys engaged in a general practice of law in the Chicago area, but became increasingly through the early and mid-70s focused on working for mortgage servicers, and in particularly working on foreclosure, bankruptcy, and other default-related matters. And in 1981 or early 82, Jerry, who also had a law license in Florida, went down there to see if there was any opportunity, probably looking to snowbird, as many people have in this time of year.
Anyone who lives in that part of the country is going to look to go somewhere warm, yes.
Sure, and realized at that point that much of the foreclosure work being done in Florida, and maybe throughout the rest of the U.S. at that time, was being done on an hourly basis or for very considerable fees. And he took the model they had developed in Illinois and kind of stood on a soapbox and says, hey, why don't we just do all these for $750 flat fee? And garnered a tremendous amount of business immediately. And then from there, went into Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana. Think of this as being the early 80s and the oil, gas, boom, and bust cycle. And attracted the attention of a large mortgage servicer who said, look, I've got these boxes of loans that I've been acquiring because mortgage securitization had been following this path at that time, and said, I don't even know what to do in the states, and I'm not even sure what the status is. If you can get into these 14 or 15 states in the next 90 days, I'll let you handle all of these matters. So from there, the end of the short story is at the high point, He was involved with his partner in offices in 41 jurisdictions. Today we, that is, we logs support a number of these businesses in 31 jurisdictions around the United States. So,
wow. You are operating in 31 jurisdictions. By the way, one of the things that comes up is logs is an interesting name. Is it an acronym or is it just, what does it stand for anything?
It's an organic thing. How many people remember what 3M stands for anymore, right? Or even IBM?
That's exactly right.
The acronym originally was Law Offices of Gerald Shapiro, and it grew that way because the various law firms that were created or merged into or started in different states were, you know, somebody in Shapiro or Shapiro and somebody. And so to refer to those without a laundry list, Jerry just called them the Law Offices of Gerald Shapiro. That grew into logs. And then the so-called the national business that I run today, you know, provides services to those. So those law firms, title agencies, trustee companies, and the like that are out there around in these 30 jurisdictions are not directly part of what we operate and run. We provide back office services, if you will, human resources, finance, risk management, technology support, and the like for those, even though they're at least partially owned by the founders of my company.
Interesting. Alice, let's bring Alice into the discussion here. I know she's got a couple questions. Alice?
Well, Jerry, what are some of the other services you provide to the industry?
Well, in addition to that, what I call back office support or logistical support for the members of the group, we have an REO management division, and we pride ourselves on always being high touch and working more in a boutique business with clients who insist on having a better control of their assets after the foreclosure disposition. We do own a couple of trustee companies that operate primarily in the western states doing foreclosure work. I have a business process outsourcing division that operates both domestically and in Panama. And in 2007, and Dave alluded to this, I started a loss mitigation company within Lodge, Hard Financial Services.
And that's really kind of where I want to get into is some of the things. You've been handed, Jerry, some pretty daunting tasks. I mean, like the one says, we've got boxes of loans here that need to be dealt with and dove into. One of the stories that really caught my attention, just your personality catches my attention. I enjoy your dialogue we've enjoyed at these conferences. But one of the things that just really impressed me is you achieved some extraordinary results when handed some things, and you did it overnight, and I think it's a stark contrast to what we've noticed our ability of our government and some of our services to do. Would you get into that a little bit? And listeners, the reason I'm bringing this is as you listen to what Jerry's accomplished, think of things, some challenges that you have, and this is the kind of attitude you need to attack him with. Jerry, give our listeners a little background on that story that I'm referring to.
Yes, you and I talked in September about Hart Financial, and in summer of 2006, and this is part of a regular process we engage in within the company, is to do not only tactical but strategic planning. And it wasn't me. Somebody within my management group said, you know, would we ever think about doing some work in the loss mitigation space? And it was an interesting idea, and we kicked it around. And so I said, well, you know, let's talk to some of our clients, because the last thing we want to do is go to a party where we haven't been invited. And to the extent that we might be treading on some core competency of our of the client base. And when I say our clients, I mean the mortgage servicers around the country. So I called four or five of them, some people I've known, some mentors in the space, and they said, well, that's really nice that you're thinking about doing that, but number one, we don't need any help. Interesting comment if we fast forward to today. And the second is, if we were, why would we use lawyers to help us? And I found that an interesting statement because as a practicing lawyer myself for many years, I don't have time to do it anymore, but back in the Detroit area, I mean, doing foreclosure practice, we were always doing cash for keys and repayment plans some form of loss mitigation, cash for keys being an easy way to avoid an eviction. And ultimately, the end resort of loss mitigation is let's do a rapid and clean foreclosure of the property and move it back into the marketplace. So we said, okay, fine, you know, you don't need any help, then we're not going to force ourselves, and we left it alone. Well, at the February 2007 Mortgage Bankers Conference, that was the word on everybody's tongue, was loss mitigation. So I came back, I talked to our founder, Jerry Shapiro, and said, you know, we should really revisit that. And he said, boy, you're going to have to make a business case. I said, okay. And I called some of the same people and maybe a few others and said, what's your number one challenge for 2007? And they said, loss mitigation. So there we go.
There you go.
I put it together in April 2007. We you know, made sure we had technology in place. We saw it as a bridge, the gap from collection that was, you know, traditionally done in-house with the servicers and the foreclosure, and heard these stories about, oh, 50% of our borrowers go to foreclosure and we never had a conversation with them. And yet, as the lawyers working in the field, you know, oftentimes you talk to 40 or 50% of those same borrowers when you start the action, when you post something on the front door, whatever it may be. And we said, there's got to be an intersect here. As a former math guy, you know, I saw this Venn diagram with an intersect, and I said, if we can just work the middle space. Well, fast forward a couple of months, we got an opportunity to work with one of the largest servicers in the country, and they kind of tilted their head and said, you know what, we'll give you 42,000 loans. Well, at the time, I had six employees, I think. So we said, okay, we'll take the 42,000 loans. And because they didn't tell us we couldn't do it, we built out, in a matter of weeks, not months or years, a you know, very nice call center environment, put the technology in place that we'd already had and leveraged it. I hired over 80 people in five business days and spent the next 3 weeks training them.
Wow.
And we reached right party contact on about 80% of those first 42,000 loans, and that was the Fannie Mae Home Saver Advance, and there was some Freddie Mac rate reduction, the early programs pre-HAMP. And we got a 60% closing rate on the people we actually reached, so about 50% of that portfolio got some form of relief and saved from foreclosure. Over the next year and a half, we worked with about 1.2 million consumers for a number of servicers, became one of the component servicers under the HAMP program, did maybe 2.3 or 2.4 million phone calls. And the end result, and what's really the success story there is, you know, our staff, the people that we put together, had some part in completing about 350,000 modifications. So we're very proud of that effort, what we were able to do.
Yeah, well, not only are you proud of it, but has anyone else out there achieved those results? I have not heard of anyone having that kind of success.
Yeah, I can't speak for the rest of them, but I do know that, you know, when we brought our staff in initially and started teaching them, and we were lucky because that first major engagement happened in early May. We had a lot of college students looking for work in the Chicagoland area. We had 22,000 square feet of space sitting vacant on the third floor of our building, and we just transformed it and really in about 10 business days into, you know, fully carpeted, repainted, cubes everywhere, everything wired and for sound and had a VOIP system running. And, you know, part of it, I think, is the flexibility of a small business and just being able to go to your owners and say, this is the right thing to do. And we actually engineered it. I hate to say that, but I engineered it to begin with to lose money because we really didn't want to make money off the misfortune of people. But, you know, we did all of those mods and all of that effort without charging a single borrower a dollar. And that's what we're really proud about.
Well, you've achieved some tremendous results. There's several things, listeners, I want you to listen to that came out of that I think are really important parts of the story. And then we're going to take a brief break. But the number one thing is this. Is he saw an opportunity. He visited it. The timing wasn't quite right, and Jerry backed away from it until he saw the timing right. It's always keeping what I refer to, as my dad used to refer to this, is a wet finger in the air. Which way are the winds blowing? Looking at the vane, weather vane, on top of the building. Have the winds change, and are there opportunities that have adjusted from what you might have thought to be a good opportunity, you gave up something. Maybe time to come back and visit that something, whatever that was. Look at the weather. Jerry saw it and made an adjustment, came back, and then he was outstandingly successful because, number one, he had this vision, it can be done, and he refused to accept the fact that, and he hasn't gotten into this because he's being modest on the radio for the first time here, but not modest for the first time. He's first time on the program talking about this. I want to make sure I clarify that. That could have come out sounding wrong, Jerry. But the reality is you did come out and you put that office together and you have achieved phenomenal results. And it's because you went about an intelligent process. And I tell you, folks, these are the things that we have got some changes coming in 2012. We're going to be talking a little bit about that after the break. we're going to talk about some, you know, Jerry's perspective, where we see things going, how is Hamp going to have it, is Harp going to be doing it, what is going to be adjusting. I think everyone's fairly optimistic as we go into the first half of this 2012, but it's after that. What strategies are you going to have? We're going to get some perspective on that. We'll be right back in just a minute. I'm going to talk, as one of the things I'm going to talk about is our new sponsor, New Penn Financial. We had on as a guest is Bob Wexler, who is Vice President of Wholesale and Correspondent Lending. And Bob was on here talking about some of their new products, their new portfolio products. And here's some highlights that I just want to bring out, make sure that you, the listeners, are aware of these products and programs that are out there. It says, number one, is there's just missed agency product. They are out there doing loans that are just outside of the agency guidelines. This is not subprime. This is not doing, we're not going back to subprime days, folks. We're going back to something that is for those loans that are just falling out of agency. New Penn Financial can handle them. Also, they have some expanded debt ratios. Really important this particular time. Jumbo loans and super jumbo loan amounts are available that they have available, and we'll talk about what they're doing in the secondary markets in just a minute. There is no mortgage insurance on any of these loans. That's a big plus, especially when you sit and look what's going on in the world of mortgage insurance. It's just such a real challenge for so many of them out there. And then owner-occupied second homes and non-owner-occupied, they have some of those programs. One of the things I thought was really fascinating is Bob was talking last week about the foreign national loans that they have. Also, interest-only loans, assets for income. So in other words, if you're struggling on the income side, but you have a borrower that has a lot of assets, you've got some compensating factors that they will take into consideration. I think what's most significant about New Penn Financial is who recently acquired them. Again, it's a consortium of three basic companies and groups that came together. But there's one name that stood out in my attention. It was Lou Ranieri. Lou Ranieri's back in the game, and he's bought this company. He's investing money. They're using pension funds. A pension fund is partnered in this thing. They're using those pension funds to be able to aggregate loans, and they'll be doing securities. If you guys don't know who Lou Ranieri is, he's the father of the mortgage-backed security. You follow what he's done. He's pretty smart. He's got some pretty good idea of what timing is. Folks, this is probably one of the most encouraging things I can tell you about. I encourage you to go in and get some more information about this. Again, go to www.lickinonlending.com. There is a 1-800 number that you can call there, so go over there. Download, click on that, you'll find access, get more information from their website, as well as the phone number you can call. We appreciate so much our new sponsor, New Penn Financial, as well as we appreciate all of our sponsors. All right, let's get back to our discussion with Jerry Ault with Logs Network, and very excited to have you with us, Jerry. I want to throw the mic over to Joe Farr here for a minute. Joe?
Thanks, Dave. And Dave, you kind of teed up my question. I appreciate that. Jerry, as you talked about anticipating the need for, to support loss mitigation efforts and to support the heavy degree of modifications that were coming, makes me wonder, what are you anticipating now? What do you see in the need for your services will be in the next, short time period?
I think that loss mitigation was one of those, children you kept in the other room when the adults were talking historically, and it's become a core part of servicing, and that's evident under Dodd-Frank and to some extent the OCC consent orders against some of the bigger servicers. So I think there's a continuing need for that. There's some, question and dialogue going on, at least in my mind, when you talk about single point of contact with your borrowers. Is that a single point for a finite period of time, and then you shut it off and move that delinquent loan down into your law firms for handling? Or do you really want to have a continuity of conversation and bring those business partners, those vendors, into the loop so that you can continue to maintain the effort with your borrowers? And everybody wants to save the loan. It was a myth maybe in the early 80s that the banks were in the business of foreclosing so they can make a profit on the REOs, and I challenge any of your listeners to avoid laughing out loud about that one these days.
So, what do you anticipate the greatest challenges in the next, couple years for our industry in general?
I think one of the immediate challenges, and you know, we've seen the pointy end of the spear on some of that, and know that the servicers are you know, struggling with it as well, is that with the new regulation and legislation, the paradigm has changed. We have a 30-year-old model of mortgage banking that's now been dramatically changed with the new legislation. And part of the challenge for all of us, for every player, is defining what our roles are going to be going forward and how we're going to partner. It's a question of control versus oversight. In the past, you know, you'd hire a lawyer, you'd hire an inspection company, or you'd hire an appraiser, and you'd let them do their thing. And now there's a lot more intrusion required by the mortgage lending community into those vendors. But what's lacking right now is a standardization. And I commented off air to Dave about this before the show. I said, standardization, let's get everybody in the room and determine what these rules are going to be and how to best and most easily accommodate everybody's needs. I mean, you know, I go back. The Ten Commandments came out in a version 1.0. There wasn't a committee involved. The Bill of Rights has survived for 200 years. And yet, in the face of what's happened over the last 12 months, you know, post-robo-signing or whatever it may be that was causing it, we've got different segments of the industry, and it's led from the legislature and Treasury and the other regulators all the way down to the individual investors and auditors of the mortgage servicers. But everybody's trying their best to create the new rules from whole cloth instead of, again, from my opinion, this isn't Log's opinion, is instead of trying to get, you know, a consensus, because that's how we're going to avoid, you know, most of our operational challenges going forward.
Sure.
Makes sense. I want to toss the mic to Andy and then get over to Alice. I'm looking at the clock. We're running out of time fast. I've got to get a couple other things in, but Andy?
Hey, Dave. Well, it's amazing how that clock keeps ticking, doesn't it?
I know.
Look away, and it's like 5 minutes later. Well, Jerry, real quick, one of the questions that's on my mind is, what are your thoughts on the agencies? Are they what's happening to Fannie Freddie? Are they going away? Are they staying around? I know your wife works at Fannie. Hopefully they're going to stay around, but what do you think?
Apart from my personal bias in favor of that, you know, something, whether it's Fannie, Freddie, or Franny, it doesn't. You know, again, Dave said something about, you know, understanding what's going on in the world. I'm the kind of guy who has to go outside when my head gets wet. I know it's going to rain. I'm not so sure that anybody has a crystal ball, but I believe that we need some government influence and participation in mortgage lending to make it successful, to open up residential loans for the new people who are coming into that marketplace. You know, prices of properties is not sufficient if you can't qualify for a loan. And I'm not sure that private capital is ready to enter strongly into that market if there's no government guarantee behind it.
Yeah, I think it's so true.
Good point.
I mean, it's really true. Let's talk a little bit briefly on this as far as the housing turnaround. What do you think, when do you see we're going to see a housing turnaround? In other words, I think we're getting close to the bottom. That seems to be consensus. And if you agree with that, how long before we start actually seeing this thing start heading up? Any feel for that, Jerry?
Well, you know, you talk about the can-do attitude. I think I put myself somewhere squarely between a realist and an optimist. You know, the optimist thinks the glass is half full. The pessimist thinks it's half empty. And, of course, the engineer who's the ultimate realist thinks it's just a poorly designed container. I do agree with the consensus that we're probably closer to 5 years out before we normalize. Normalize doesn't mean getting back to 2003 and 4 where values are going rapidly up. But what we have to assume is not only the houses that are in inventory and the fact that the inventory outpaces the number of people willing to commit to take on a mortgage, but we've got those normal defaults. We've got, if you go back a few months and listen, over 1 million loans in the so-called shadow inventory of distressed borrowers. Yeah. And then we have to further take into account all of the delayed loans, the delayed cases since summer of 2010 when the robo-signer crisis came in. So I think 5 years is a reasonable estimate. We might do a little bit better, but, you know, it's not tomorrow.
It's not tomorrow. Yeah, I hate to say it. I absolutely agree with you. Real quick, as we go to the door here in just a second, but what do you think of the opportunities in 2012? HARP, HAMP, any of that bringing some opportunities for originators?
Well, you know, HARP is overdue. It improved on the original HARP by reducing or eliminating, I should say, the 125% LTV consideration. So now you can help borrowers who are seriously underwater. And we saw a lot of that, when we were talking to borrowers throughout 2008, 9, and early 10, that they just couldn't be helped because they didn't qualify for the program. I think it's going to provide a challenge to some of the existing lenders, I should say those who are servicing their loans, because it's a defensive move to some extent to participate in HARP 2 and avoid that loan being refied out and going to another servicer. And then, one of the things that's been widely publicized is what happens to our MI on it. And some notes have been coming out on the transferability of the MI. So I think that is one of the significant opportunities going into 2012.
Jerry, thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate you taking time. We just got a little snippet of that wonderful personality, great sense of humor that you have. Appreciate you. We've got to have you back in the new year. We wish you the very, very best. Folks, if you want to go learn more about logs, go to www.logs.com. Jerry, thanks so much. Have a very Merry Christmas, and look forward to having you back on the program again this next year.
Thank you very much, Dave.
You bet. Jerry, have a great one. All right, everybody, we're going to bring Tony Garitano on here in just a minute. Tony is out there talking to us about technology. There's been a number of references to technology on the program. Tony, it's good to have you be with us each and every week. Bring us an update. What do you got for us today?
Well, Dave, I thought, it's December. We're going to get into predictions and what we should do in 2012
yes.
and how we did in 2011. And I think I wanted to start by saying, 2011 was kind of mixed in terms of technology, in my opinion. I think that LO compensation was probably not dealt with the way I would have liked to have seen it dealt with initially.
Yeah.
It took the lending community a lot of time to think about how they were going to change their model, how they were going to change their technology, and it really was not a smooth transition because I don't think a lot of lenders got ahead of the curve
the way
they should have.
I agree.
But on the positive side, I think that UAD
yes.
and the appraisal standards that I've been talking
about
on the show,
and
you've been talking about on the show, and Aleph has been talking about on the show, I think that that has some promise, and lenders actually did respond pretty well, and vendors stepped up, and there was a lot of education, and I'm happy with how the lending community got ahead of the curve, and I think that that should be one
that
of the lessons
so good, yes.
for 2012.
Yeah.
Get ahead of the curve, use technology, it's your friend, try to improve your process, don't be a laggard, it's not a really bad thing to automate processes that use way too much paper to begin with.
That's right, yeah. That's so true. But, I think that's a great analogy. We missed it on many missed it on the LO comp side, but, on the appraisal side, it looks like they reacted and that was corrected. Hopefully that's a new trend that we'll see moving forward. And for those of you who want to know what's going on in the trends, you've got to dial in and go to www.progressinlending.com. Look at what Tony and his team have put up there. There's some brilliant commentary. Tony, I appreciate you bringing us an update. Any final thoughts on technology, anything we should be looking at?
I would say my final thought would be to act. I wrote a column on Friday about inaction, and I think that the final comment would be do something, think about technology, and implement smartly.
Implement smartly. Thank you, Tony, so much for being with us. Folks, we appreciate you tuning in each and every week, listening to the program. Thank you very much. It means a lot to us. We take time to do this and produce this. It's for you, our listeners, and we appreciate you being a part of it and telling others about it. Also, I want to say this is next week we will have Jay Brinkman of the NBA, Chief Economist for the NBA, on the program. You're not going to want to miss that program. Great, great content. Folks, have a great week. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Elvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.